Several cities in Iowa use red light or traffic cameras. Others are seeking to install them. However, their expanded use is being complicated by state guidelines. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Van Kiefer. This hour, what research says about the efficacy of traffic cameras. We'll talk to their supporters and opponents, and also a look at how those DOT guidelines are changing the equation. Do you have traffic cameras in your community? Tell us what you think of them. Also, in five words or less, tell us what peeves you most about others driving. We turn the key on our discussion right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, it's all about driving and traffic. Driving happens to be a place where people do a lot of public radio listening. We want to talk about the new red light or traffic cameras that are found in various communities around Iowa within the last few years. And we also want to talk more towards the end of the hour about general pet peeves you have. What do other drivers do that bothers you the most? Let's talk about red light cameras first of all. Several cities in Iowa use red light or traffic cameras. Perhaps other communities in Iowa are seeking to install them, but they're facing some roadblocks. Their expanded use is being complicated by state guidelines. And this hour, we want to find out what research says about the efficacy of these traffic cameras. And we'll talk to supporters, opponents. Maybe we'll talk to you and get your thoughts. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. This is River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. And joining me, first of all, Shauna Hallmark is with us in our Ames studio. Shauna is the Associate Director at the Institute of Transportation at Iowa State University. Thanks for coming in today, Shauna.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And also with us, Dan McGeehee in our Iowa City studio. He's the Director of the Human Factors and Vehicle Safety Research Division at the University of Iowa Public Policy Center. Dan McGeehee, welcome to you.
Thanks, man.
So let's talk a little bit about what we've learned, starting with you, Shauna, about traffic cameras, how they affect driving behavior, how specifically we've seen their effects here in Iowa.
Okay, so at the Institute for Transportation, we've done two separate studies on the red light running camera, both of which were funded by the Iowa Department of Transportation. In the first study, we looked at the cameras in Davenport, Clive, and Council Bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked primarily at reduction in crashes. So the key finding of that study was in Davenport, we found a 40% reduction in red light running related crashes, and in we found at the other site, in Council Bluffs, we found a 90% reduction in red light running related crashes. And what I mean by red light running related, those are the crashes where people run through a red light and T-bone someone, which are the more fatal, usually more serious crashes. One common misconception that's out there, there's been some studies that have suggested that red light running cameras could possibly increase rear-end crashes because, obviously, if people break for the light and people behind them aren't expecting it, you could end up having more rear-end crashes. Overall, even if that occurred, they tend to be less severe than T-bones or red light running-related crashes. But in Iowa, we found that actually the rear-end crashes actually went down at red light running camera-related intersections.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first study. Then in the second study, we looked at the cameras in Cedar Rapids. We worked with the police officers out there and kind of followed what they were doing. And we didn't have enough after data to do a crash analysis, but we did look at the reduction in violations at those intersections. And there was up to 80-90% reduction in red light running violations depending on which intersection you were at. One thing that we found that was very interesting that no other study has to date found, we knew at what point people running the red light were, how late they were into the red. And so a lot of opponents of the cameras have suggested that they're not terribly effective because they're only reducing red light running that's just at the beginning of the red, and the people who are distracted and running it late into the red aren't being affected. However, our study showed that The cameras were actually more likely to reduce the number of people running the red light 3 or more seconds into the red than they were for people who were running it at the beginning of the red. So some pretty important key findings in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. It certainly does. What we know, we're trying to tally before the show here, the communities in Iowa that do have red light cameras, traffic cameras, Davenport, you mentioned Council Bluffs, Bettendorf, Cedar Rapids, Muscatine, I believe,
yes.
Bettendorf, perhaps. Our listeners perhaps can help us out. If you have a red light camera in your community, tell us, how are you finding it's changing the safety on your roads in that particular area? Shauna, these are generally put in places that a city deems to be particularly accident prone, hazardous?
Yes. So there's always the common people believe they go up because cities want to generate income. We have never found that to be the case in Iowa. All the cities that we've worked with have had a definite red light running problem. In all cases, they have tried to do some other countermeasure first to see if that would work, which is, as engineers, we always suggest that you start with the low-cost countermeasure first before you go to something drastic. So all the ones in Iowa that we're aware of have actually studied the intersections, made sure they had a problem, and tried other things first.
Mm-hmm. But we can't deny that revenue would be a big incentive. I'm looking here at some statistics generated by traffic violations caught on camera, and this money is split between the city and its vendor, in this case Cedar Rapids and the vendor that they chose to put in these cameras. State does not get a cut of this, and that might explain some of the problems that we're having. For example, in fiscal year 2012, this year, traffic enforcement cameras in Cedar Rapids generated $6.4 million in revenue. $6.4 million in revenue, $2.2 million of that going to the vendor. Now, you say no city has decided to do that, Shauna, but that is a tremendous incentive for cities if they can put millions into their revenue stream.
Well, that's true. But ideally, you put the cameras up to get people to stop running the red
right.
light. So if everybody stops running the red light, you have no income.
Okay. Do you happen to know, do the cities have free rein as far as where any of those monies are funneled?
As far as I know, I don't get into the funding mechanism side. I know that when we talked to Cedar Rapids, they were actually really interested in, making sure the money went to the right place. But one thing that's also not brought up is there is a cost back to the agency putting in the red light running cameras. They typically have to hire additional officers to review the crashes because in most cases, the city actually has a police officer review the violation to make sure it was an actual violation. So there's some cost back to the city in making sure they have more people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of where the money goes. But
mm-hmm. One would assume they also save on manpower because they don't have to have police officers sitting there with the car radars.
Yes. And also, let me point out one thing. With speed enforcement, a cop can sit, or a police officer can sit, by the side of the road, pick out a location, and they can pick up people who are speeding and be somewhat unobtrusive. It's extremely difficult to catch red light runners in the act at an intersection because where does the officer sit? That would be the first question. And then it's really hard for the officer to look at the red light and tell that the person ran the red light and be able to get through it. So the idea that you can just put officers out there to solve the problem is not really viable because it's not practical for officers to be sitting at intersections and then trying to make sure it's red before they catch somebody. So,
okay. Shauna Hallmark is Associate Director at the Institute for Transportation at Iowa State University. If you just heard a couple of studies on traffic cameras, red light cameras at work here in Iowa. Dan McGeehee with us. Dan, how does your research, your area in the Iowa Public Policy Center overlap with any of the red light or traffic cameras?
Well, we actually do quite a bit of work with Iowa State and Shauna on naturalistic driving, where we actually have systems and video cameras inside vehicles. So we actually can view these crashes from the inside out and understand what's going on at the time of these crashes.
That have to do with intersections and potentially at these intersections with red light cameras.
Exactly. And we do see some intersection crashes in our own studies. But in terms of the cost, one thing to consider as well is that the cost of intersection crashes is quite high. When you have a crash at an intersection, you don't have a lot of protection when you get hit on the side of your vehicle. So those types of crashes tend to be quite injurious. Mm-hmm. So the issue, too, in terms of cost savings needs to be looked at sort of downstream in terms of the medical costs to the state as well.
Also joining our conversation now, Representative Walt Rogers. He's a Republican who represents House District 20. Representative Rogers, welcome to our program by phone.
Well, thank you.
Remind us of where District 20 is in Iowa.
It's actually now District 60 with redistricting, and it's the west, southwest part of Waterloo, south part of Cedar Falls and Hudson. So
okay.
The southwest corner of Blackhawk County.
Okay. Representative Rogers, we've asked you on this program because we're aware that you're not entirely in favor of red light or traffic cameras. Are they at work in your district?
We do not have them in Blackhawk County.
Okay.
As far as I know. So.
What are your feelings, your arguments against the camera? What are your concerns?
Well, my concerns are, first and foremost, probably, I think, the slippery slope to a potential police state that it does cause. I think the unconstitutionality of the way they are utilized. Those are my two largest concerns. As I've also looked at data as far as safety and data as far as revenue, I think the data safety is conflicting at best.
How do you say conflicting? Because we heard from Shauna Hallmark, who's done these two studies. We were hearing figures, the lowest figure in reduction I heard was 40%. We were up to the 80 or 90% reduction in red light related crashes. That's almost like having a magic wand, isn't it, Representative Rogers?
I've seen data that shows that across the country, data that shows, the side crashes actually might be decreased, whereas the rear end actually increase in some instances. So, if you do enough research, you'll see that that data is out there and is very conflicting in several instances. So,
Shauna Hallmark, how do you respond to the charge of it being conflicting, the data?
I would say I've probably read every published paper on red light running that exists that I know of. The papers that there's actually very few papers that have conflicting results. The people who have done serious research in the area who are independent researchers have almost always shown either there's not like a huge change or there's a reduction. But in most cases, there's a reduction. So I would just say I'm not sure what literature he's reading or what his statistical background is or what his understanding of the problem is. But I think that there's no serious person in my field who studies this who would actually say that they're not effective.
Representative Rogers, you've gathered signatures, I understand, from your district. To what end and how many?
I did not do the data collection. I know people who have done actual collection here in Blackhawk County with the result of over 90% of people not wanting speed cameras and the red light camera system.
Can you name the data source that you have?
It was just a local grassroots effort.
Okay. So. Without a name or without an organization?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Okay. What are your other hesitancies about this? When we talk about Walt Rogers, what are your other hesitations, concerns here, aside from what you've already mentioned?
Yeah. Again, we've already talked about the idea that, I talk to people about this issue maybe more than anybody in the state because I kind of presented the band last year. And I don't know of anybody that actually likes this idea of a system that we go down where we're having cameras at every intersection, cameras watching us, what we're doing on the S-curve in Cedar Rapids, for instance. Overall, there's just this feeling in our culture that people don't want us to go down that road.
Okay. Would it be? It seems, would you agree that it's sort of a matter of priorities that we always have trade-offs in safety issues in our society. No one desires more surveillance than needed. What if it saves lives? If it saves the life of someone in your family, for instance, to have any measure, be it a red light camera or a railing on a balcony at a certain height. We have to have those safety measures, don't we?
Yeah, and isn't that, that's the question of, the foundational questions of our country as a country built on freedom. How much freedom are we going to sacrifice for overall safety? We all can't walk out of our front door with bubble wrap around ourselves. And so, you know, you're exactly right. How much freedom are we going to give up for the safety and the actual safety? One of the things that caught my eye when we were in this process last year was when we presented the ban, it seemed like people in Cedar Rapids tried to do an all-out assault on our idea and, of banning these things. And it came to our attention that they're putting out data that showed the accident rate going down in Cedar Rapids because of the cameras. Well, we found out that that accident rate correlated exactly to the snowfall rate that took place in Cedar Rapids.
Let's get a reaction from either Shauna or Dan. Shauna, reactions to what he's been saying in the last few minutes?
Well, I first want to point out that running a red light is illegal. So according to what he's saying, let's just take out all traffic control because you should have the freedom to do whatever you want anytime you want. So I guess I disagree. I think once you get on a public roadway, you have some responsibility as a citizen to obey the traffic laws of this country. I sit at red lights, and there's this red light in Ankeny where every time I pull up to that light, someone will run that red light right in front of me. And I've just learned to, you know, stop and wait a little bit. So does that person have the right to, you know, kill me or my family? No, they don't. And I think that that's the that to me is the answer there, is that people simply don't have the right to kill other people.
Could you, Shauna, point
down that road? But
Walt Rogers, you were talking about putting him up at every intersection. There are now DOT guidelines since June of 2012. Are there not, Shauna? Can you remind us of some of the parts of these guidelines?
Yeah. So the DOT has the exact same concern that they'll be used. As engineers, we want to do things to save people's lives. We're not interested in making money so much. So in order to make sure that there's not crossing that threshold with any type of countermeasure that we implement on the roadways, we want to make sure that there's a reason to put it up there, that it's effective. And so the DOT has simply proposed that there be an engineering study that takes place before those cameras are put up. So if you were to get an independent consulting engineering firm to go ahead and look at the intersection and determine if other things have been tried first, and then, you know, if they make a recommendation that cameras make sense, then, you know, you can go ahead and proceed. And if not, then you need to rethink. So I think if you involve engineers in the process and people who are really trying to use common sense and good judgment, that I think that you could avoid that.
Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied with this check, the Department of Transportation here in Iowa, providing these guidelines to communities so they do have a framework to answer some of the concerns, Representative Rogers?
I do. I do. Like the idea that the DOT has put some restrictions and restraints on as far as cities just going ahead and deciding to put up on a whim certain traffic cameras. So I like that aspect. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I brought up the idea that the correlation of snowfall with the Cedar Rapids accident rate. And I brought that out many times. No one ever addresses it. Nobody ever says,
I guess I don't quite understand it. Can you explain it?
The accident rate went down in Cedar Rapids area at the same rate that the snowfall went down. We had a couple of mild winters, and so because of the mild winter, we think that was the main reason the accident rate went down.
It happened to coincide with the emergence of speed cameras in
exactly.
Cedar Rapids. Okay,
exactly.
Shauna, can you answer that specific question?
Yeah, so... we have not yet had time to study the Cedar Rapids because normally you want to leave the cameras in place for a couple of years. You don't want to just look at it immediately after because obviously crashes are rare events, so you don't have a large enough sample size. So what we have typically done, what we did in Cedar Rapids what we did in Clive and Davenport is we looked at intersections within the same city, which did not have the red light running cameras, and we compared the crash rate for those intersections during the same time period for intersections that had red light running cameras installed. And so we found that in comparison to the control intersections, you had decreases. So in order for anyone to comment on the cameras in Cedar Rapids, you would need to wait, you know, maybe another year to get a little more crash data. Mm-hmm. And we will probably do this at some point. Then you'll take intersections in Cedar Rapids that have no cameras and compare them to intersections where you have cameras, and then you can say with some significance that, yes, there was a decrease, or no, there wasn't a decrease. But I think that, you know, anecdotally is the only evidence that we have right now of what he's saying. But in other parts of Iowa, we have compared intersections within the same city to intersections with red light running cameras, and there was still a decrease, a significant decrease. So that can be studied at some point, but I would be very careful just taking someone's very raw analysis of crash data and using that to make some assumptions.
Dan McGeehee in Iowa City, can you say anything about the idea that perhaps mild winters explain the reduction in crashes?
When you take a look at crashes in winter and during mild winters in particular, it's sort of a double-edged sword. One thing that seems a little counterintuitive sometimes is that we actually drive more when the weather's better. And so the more we drive, the more we crash. And when we have bad winters, we tend to slow down in general and take it easy, and there are fewer of us on the road. You can certainly see different kinds of crashes that occur in winter in terms of property damage and so forth. But like I said, it's really a double-edged sword where people tend to drive more when we have a warm winter and therefore we crash. If you take a look at the overall fatality numbers for the state, we were actually up this year in 2012 compared to last year in 2011, where we've had, as of last Friday, 347 fatalities in the state of Iowa. Last year, in all of 2011, we had 337.
Walt Rogers, we had just a couple minutes before the end of this half before we're going to say goodbye to you. I think you had a concern, too, about the punishment here for being caught by a red light camera, that you would like to see an adjustment there?
I haven't talked much about punishment. I think my other biggest concern is just the constitutionality of it. You know, it's one area where you are basically guilty and you have to prove your innocence if it wasn't correct. There's been a lot of instances of some of the camera systems not being calibrated correctly. There are instances in New York City just recently where they were intentionally lowering the yellow light time by just a fraction of a second that increased the number of tickets they got.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a lot of problems with this across the country, and a lot of cities and that have had them are getting rid of them because they just don't the revenue's not coming in like they expected. They're too much of a pain with the appeals. It's interesting that they're not a real ticket; they're actually just a civil violation. You know,
right.
So you know, there's just a lot of problems.
Shauna Hallmark, can you comment on that? What is the reliability of the traffic camera systems that we have? We have very little time left.
So they calibrate the cameras frequently. Also, you have the right to face your accuser, so anyone who gets a red light running ticket can go down to the police station where the ticket was issued, and they can review it with the officer, and they can explain the situation if they want to do that. Also, the constitutionality of them, in all cases, they have been declared constitutional.
No,
you don't have a right to privacy on a public roadway.
That's not true. They have not been constitutional in all cases.
Okay. Very quickly, Walt Rogers, last spring the Iowa legislature debated, ultimately did not pass a ban on traffic enforcement cameras. What do you see as a future of them in this next session?
I think this next session, you know, if I was convinced that bringing it up again would be a way to further the cause, I would think about it, but I'm not sure. I'm not at this point not sure it'll be brought up again in the legislature this session, at least.
Representative Walt Rogers in House District 60, the newly named House District 60, there up in the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dan McGeehee will stay with us, as well as Shauna Hallmark, as we dovetail into a larger conversation, a broader conversation about behavior behind the wheel. Tell us in five words or less what peeves you most about those other people in cars driving in your city. What do you come across that bothers you again and again? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or give us a tweet at IPR Talk. Back with more, I guess we can call it driving you crazy, after this short break. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this hour maybe we should have a little renaming of the show. River to River, we should call it Road to Road, Highway to Highway. We're talking about behavior on the roads, and we're asking this half hour, what peeves you most about what others do in their driving habits? 1-866-780-9100, something that happens again and again that really gets you a little bit torn up inside. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us in the studio, Dan McGehee in Iowa City, Director of the Human Factors and Vehicle Safety Research Division at the University of Iowa Public Policy Center. In our AIM studio, Shauna Hallmark, Associate Director at the Institute for Transportation at Iowa State University. We're going to talk about some other developments in driving before we do get to some of these pet peeves. But first, some of them coming in, an email from Franny. Franny writes, folks that drive on a regular basis in the left lane, that left lane is like the bathroom. Use it and get out. Thank you, Franny, for that. Let's talk about some changes that we've had recently. Roundabouts have been popping up in many communities as alternatives to stop signs and traffic lights. Dan McGehee, why have they been popping up, and what can you tell us about how they perform when compared to regular, traditional intersections?
Well, we're seeing a lot more roundabouts here in Iowa and around the country. Roundabouts have been around a long time in Europe, and they're extremely effective at cutting down intersection crashes. And I recognize that people are a bit frightened of them, and they're very uncertain. But that this is really a case where uncertainty is a good thing. And so what they make you do is essentially you have to slow down and look at everybody in that intersection.
When you hear people's concerns about roundabouts being introduced to a community for the first time and people encountering for perhaps the first time in their lifetime, what are the chief concerns in particular?
Well, I think there's a lot of uncertainty about who goes first. It's like any intersection. There are rules on which side to yield from and so forth. But I think once you explain to people that uncertainty is really the purpose of the roundabout, where you really want to look at everybody in the eye as you go through that intersection and understand and slow down and brake, that's really what we're looking for in terms of slowing people down. Mm-hmm. I think there's an assumption many times in intersections that people are going to stop, that they're going to obey that red light. Or we're going to assume that once we have a green light, that it's ready to go. There are many people that run those red lights. So roundabouts can be a very effective way to reduce intersection crashes.
Shauna, have you looked at or have a comment on roundabouts?
Yeah, we actually have done some research on roundabouts. And as Dan was saying, they definitely reduce crashes. But the bigger thing is they reduce crash severity. So even, you know, at an intersection, when someone runs a stop sign or a red light, you get a T-bone crash. With a roundabout, you kind of end up with an angle crash, so you usually have lower speeds and then lower severity. So it's not just the reduction in crashes, but also the reduction in severity that we like for roundabouts. But I agree with Dan, they can be confusing to people, but the whole purpose of the way they're designed is they force people physically to slow down, so you have to enter intersection at lower speed.
Europe has had these around for many decades. We are, in some parts of the U.S., new coming to them, or them coming to us. So do you think that this confusion, which I'm seeing as the downside here, will, as time goes on, will be less and less as people get more acquainted with them, Shauna?
Absolutely. I think one thing, if you have an older driver in your family, it might be useful if a roundabout goes in near them to maybe help them negotiate that a couple times, because I think that maybe the older drivers would be the biggest concern that we have in Iowa, someone who's never seen a roundabout before.
Mm-hmm. In Europe, I haven't done it myself. I've been driven around in one of the Paris roundabouts, which are 7 or 8 lanes deep. Now, that can be a scary experience.
Yeah.
Let's go to our callers. We're looking for pet peeves about driving, others driving. Of course, you don't drive poorly, do you? So we're talking about other people's driving habits. Nathan, what about you in North Liberty? What are you most bothered about on the roads?
Inconsistency, Mr. Ben. Say I have my cruise control on and someone passes me, then for no reason slows down, and I pass them, even though I have not sped up, then I have to go around them, and then they get angry because I've gone around them, some sort of macho thing, and they pass me again, and then they slow down. Like, I have not changed my speed. I am setting it, and you
right.
do not know what consistency is.
Oh, how many times have people had that experience? Do you take any particular action, or do you just grit your teeth, Nathan, and try not to escalate it, in your mind at least, and stress yourself out?
Oh, I drive for a living, so I let it go now. It frustrates me, but I know there's nothing I can do. There's no point in getting angry or giving the finger or anything like that.
Okay. Nathan in North Liberty, thank you for your input today.
Thank you, sir.
1-866-780-9100. And looking for pet peeves of others, let's go to Veronica with perhaps another pet peeve on the road. What do you have for us, Veronica, in Iowa City?
Ben, improper blinker use.
Mm.
You know, it's a real pet peeve of mine when people just do not use their blinkers, or they use their blinkers when they don't need to, or, you know, don't use them when they should. So
yes, it is a pet peeve. And I wonder, Dan or Shauna, can you tell us, can create an accident when we take it as a fact that if someone has a blinker on, they're going to behave according to their blinker, right?
Yeah, we drive by very strict rules of the road, and there are many expectations that we have while we drive. And when somebody doesn't use a blinker to show that they're going to change lanes in front of you, that can lead to a conflict.
Mm-hmm. Other things we've got from Sean. This is a Facebook post. No turning signal. We measure. We caught that already. Talking on the phone. This is a big area that's only come up in the last few years. Talking on the phone, or I think, according to statistics, isn't it, Shauna? Worse yet, texting is much more dangerous than cell phone talking.
Yeah, I think Dan would probably better probably
answer that
question.
Dan, comment on that. Yeah.
Yeah, what's interesting about the whole cell phone conversation is that we're really talking much less today. If you take a look at how many minutes are used nationwide talking, it's going down pretty substantially. However, we're texting much more. We're interacting with social media. We're reading our emails. We're typing emails. We're updating Facebook. We're sending tweets. So the interaction that we're seeing with the phone has increased substantially in terms of how much we have to interact with it versus talking. Once you're on the phone, there's really not much interaction.
Mm-hmm.
But
what do studies show about the likelihood of having an accident when you're calling or talking on your cell phone and then texting while driving?
Well, texting is really the worst of the worst in terms of distraction, because you're what I call sort of the trifecta of distraction. Your mind is off of the road, your eyes are off the road, and your hands are off the wheel. And this is really where we see the most distractions. And we essentially get about 2 seconds to look away from the road before our lane position begins to break down, when we begin to drift out of our lane. Most text messages take about 4 seconds of eyes off the road. And so that's really where we see a big breakdown.
An email from Vanessa in Des Moines. This is what bothers her. I've noticed a lot of people in this state place their stickers all over their plate, even covering up the letters, numbers on the plate. Why are they doing this? I guess I haven't seen that, Vanessa. She goes on to write, I doubt it's supposed to happen, so please explain people doing this wrong. It really bothers me. Also, people not using the zipper method when merging. It just makes sense. Can you comment on any of those from... Shauna, from Vanessa in Des Moines.
Yeah, I have no idea that why they do that either. It might be they're trying to hide their license plate.
So they're taking the next year's registration sticker and just plastering it in a new empty spot.
Yes, yes, I don't know.
Okay, well, we have a few people chiming in with the pet peeves about right-of-way, exiting, entering an interstate here. What are the rules there, Dan, and what are you particularly interested in as someone who researches this?
Well, there's a certain order in terms of entering the roadway, yielding the right-of-way. I think there are some entries and exits onto freeways that can be quite confusing, especially ones where a vehicle is essentially exiting the freeway while you're trying to enter in. So there's traffic that's crossing in front of you, and that can be...
Right. We have sort of the simultaneously exiting and entering. So where is the rule of who has to yield in that situation?
Well, you're yielding as you're entering the freeway, are yielding to the traffic that is essentially coming out in front of you. So,
that's but if you have a situation like 380 meeting I-80.
Yes, that's a classic one.
Yeah, two major ones coming together, people exiting and entering, and then you have this sort of never-never land, don't you, right there, where you've really got to pay attention and negotiate it.
Yeah, it's clearly a dance that we do. And it requires cooperation out there. And that's where eye contact is really critical when we drive, is to really understand that people are seeing us while we are entering into these complicated roadways.
Facebook post from Tracy. Since we're heading for inclement weather, here real soon. People who refuse to turn their lights on in the rain or snow, this is what bothers Tracy. Just because you can see doesn't mean you can be seen, especially in a white or a gray car. The lights aren't for you. They're for the older driver with a beginning of cataracts, writes Tracy, who might just need a little help seeing you coming, or the truck driver who got distracted for a second after messing with his GPS, might not have seen you otherwise before pulling into traffic. Let's talk a little bit about that, because we do have this weather coming. Excellent point, Tracy, that lights aren't just for the driver to see.
Yeah, I think it's Tracy makes a super point. And this is one of my pet peeves out there, is that I really think that people need to drive with their headlights on all the time. We do see a vast increase in daylight running lamps, which means that when you turn on your car, you automatically get headlights on. But especially as we now are going to enter into this first snowfall, you will see people who have not really cleared the snow off of their car, and their headlights and their taillights are covered up with that snow. So I really encourage all the listeners out there to completely clear off your car of snow, even the hood, so that when it slides down in front of your headlights, doesn't cover that up.
Car manufacturers here in the U.S. are not required to have lights come on automatically. I believe in some other countries, France, I think, is one that where they do on all cars come on automatically. Not so here. What is the rule there, Dan?
Yeah, they do have most manufacturers do have a daylight running lamp feature. It's not a necessarily requirement, federal requirement, but it has certainly been shown in the research that it's a very effective way to cut down on head-on collisions, especially on two-lane roads. And in Iowa, where we have many rural roadways, this is a really important feature. So I really encourage the listeners to, if you don't have that feature, is to really turn on those lights even during the day.
1-866-780-9100, talking about driving behavior, perhaps what bothers you most about what you see, what you encounter while you're driving. Rick is joining us. And Rick, I understand you're a truck driver. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Rick, you're from out of state, so what do you have to say about this conversation here? You see a lot of driving and misbehavior out there, I'm sure.
Oh, I certainly think I see my share of it.
Okay. What bothers you most out there?
I think this is a great program, trying to educate the public and on concerns. Actually, I want to bring up two. Checking the last one, I agree wholeheartedly the daytime running lights are a great idea. But I think that's also a little bit of the problem. People with the daytime run lights, as it gets dark, they've got lights in front of them. They're seeing the road ahead of them. They don't realize that the rest of their lights aren't on. So sometimes I think when people, you know, they don't have their taillights on, they're running on their daylight running lights and not even realizing that their other lights aren't on. I think an automatic feature needs to be for the whole vehicle, not just for the running lights.
Mm-hmm. And you had another point, Rick?
The reason I called was... The newer high-intensity headlights, I like them. I put them on my wife's car. I put them on my mother's car. You know, we're getting elderly, and a little extra light is helps. But I think all too often they're not aimed properly. People put them in and don't check the aiming on their lights, or don't know how to check the aiming on the lights, or don't take them to a garage or dealership and get them aimed. When they're aimed high, they are blinding.
I know what you mean, Rick. And these are the more bluish lights that we see out there, and they can be distressing when you encounter them. I wonder if let's get a comment from perhaps Dan about these new headlights. What are those? Hold on there a minute, Rick.
These HID headlamps are the ones that sort of look the blue to us when we're out there driving. And they're highly variable in how much glare. What Rick's describing is sort of the glare that's increased on this type of headlamp. And each manufacturer has a slightly different design. And we did a study a number of years ago with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that found that there's a great variety in the perception of glare between manufacturers. So it is an issue that's getting better over time. With your comment, Rick, with regard to daylight running lamps being on after dark, that's something that we're seeing changing in terms of recognizing the sensors. It's much easier for cars to have sensors that automatically turn those lights on now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rick. We're going to move on because we have a lot of traffic on our lines today. Jack is with us from Iowa City. We're coming to the end of the hour. Jack, what are you seeing out there that bothers you that we haven't mentioned?
Yeah, I'll be real quick. I notice a lot of folks come to a stoplight and they leave about a car length space in front of them, and which is fine, but sometimes that ends up blocking people trying to get to a turning lane as they merge together.
Okay, thanks, Jack. What I've noticed, too, one of my personal pet peeves is people who are in a turning lane. They do not have a left-turning arrow. They have a solid green and want to turn left, but do not pull out into the intersection. And so you have one or two or three fewer cars that actually can make that if you in a heavy traffic situation
yes.
there. So do you think that, our education matches what it should in Iowa? How do Iowa drivers measure up, Dan McGehee, when we put them against East and West Coast and Chicago drivers?
Well, we tend to be much more laid back compared to the urban driver. I know that many of your listeners, when they go to Chicago, we get a different grip on the steering wheel, and we grit our teeth a bit more. So there are pretty substantial changes in how we drive. Certainly the crash types that we see in Iowa are pretty representative of the rural country that the U.S. is, and that is that most fatalities occur on the kind of rural roads that we have here. And they're oftentimes most likely are single vehicles. They don't collide with other cars. They're where you essentially drift off of the road and lose control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we see the most fatalities here in Iowa.
You're getting some interesting data from the new type of cameras that are on board. They're installed on a rearview mirror so they can see. They have a forward view of what's happening in the car. Also, interior camera. And you can learn what from an accident or a crash that you can study?
Yes, Ben, for the last 7 years, we've been doing something called naturalistic driving research, primarily among young drivers here in Iowa. And this is where we put a small data recorder that has two cameras, a forward view and a cabin view of the vehicle. And it's about the size of a deck of cards, and it sits behind the rearview mirror. And it might be on all the time, but only records when there's an abrupt braking or an abrupt steering movement. So it kind of operates like your digital video recorder, where it can go back in time and measure before a near crash or an abrupt braking event. And from that research, we've had a lot of insights into why people crash, what kinds of distractions are the most dangerous, what happens when you have multiple teens on board a vehicle, and so forth. So we're really learning a lot about why we crash from that research.
Anybody who wants to do their own bit of research can go to YouTube and type in what keywords would they be, because I've seen some videos here, very instructional as far as what happens when your car rolls, has an accident, and I think YouTube screens these for you don't watch a fatality, but you do see people rolling around in the interiors of their car. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
Yeah, it's quite graphic when you see what it looks like. And that's why I think one of the key messages always is that everybody on board needs to wear their safety belt, not just the driver, which, you know, Iowa is in the low 90% driver usage safety belt. But our passengers, and particularly our rear-seated passengers, have a pretty low safety belt usage rate. And what people don't know is that when you're into a crash, especially a frontal crash, that backseat passenger becomes a projectile. And we see many injuries from people launching inside the vehicle in rollovers and in frontal crashes.
Shauna Hallmark, we're coming to the end of our hour. A minute or two left. Did you have anything left unsaid that you'd like to get out at this point?
Yeah, I just want to remind people as they're driving for this first big winter event to slow down. People sort of think that they're a good driver and they can continue driving at the same speed, and they forget the law of physics apply.
Okay, so, and it might not even be much snow. We just need one little layer.
That's right.
On the road, and it changes the physics of the whole thing. And inevitably, we have those people pass us. Hopefully, they don't get into accidents. But on that first snow or that first ice, they haven't quite realized what's going on in terms of our environment out there, have they?
Yeah, and this really, one important factor that we see, especially among the young drivers, when you've had warm winters, this first snow may be the first time these young drivers have driven on snow. So mm-hmm. they went through their whole permit cycle and their first 6 or 9 months of driving independently, and they've never driven on snow. And mm-hmm. so there's an expectation by parents, well, they've been driving for 9 months or a year, and they'll do just fine. But that's mm-hmm. really not the case.
In fact, I believe it was a driver's ed teacher of mine several decades ago that actually encouraged us to get out into an empty parking lot, very empty parking lot, and find out without endangering any objects or yourself or your car what actually happens on ice or snow. Is that a good idea?
Absolutely. I encourage parents all the time to drive as much as possible with their young drivers when the weather's bad. And supervised driving is a very safe kind of driving because there's lots of people paying attention. And so during this first snow event, it is a good idea to go out and drive in a very controlled setting.
And one thing about those cameras, you might check out with your insurance company. They may actually provide those to your teen driver, and that has an effect of making a safer driver in that critical learning, first learning period.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan McGehee, Director of the Human Factors and Vehicle Safety Research Division at the University of Iowa Public Policy Center in our Iowa City studio. Shauna Hallmark, thank you, Associate Director at the Institute for Transportation at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Shauna, Dan, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. We want to thank Jason Burns in Ames. Executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, Politics Day. We always welcome your comments and questions on Politics Day when we chew over the latest on the political landscape. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.